Good morning. My name is David Arterburn. To my left is Everett Imbody. We will be joined, beginning with the second case, by Francie Reedman. We are the panel of the Court of Appeals sitting this month in Papillion, Nebraska. There is a separate panel that is sitting in Lincoln, Nebraska. We have five cases today, and I would remind counsel that these proceedings are being recorded. If there is any sensitive names or other material, please keep that in mind in your arguments. I will call the first case, and I will note that on the first case, Judge Reedman is recused, and Judge Moore will be participating on briefs. On the last case, I am not part of the panel, and Judge Bishop will be participating on briefs. So the first case is State versus Croft, and I see counsel is at council tables. So we will begin with, is it Mr. Wampler? You may proceed.
Morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Travis Wampler, Assistant Douglas County Public Defender. I represent the appellant in this case, Barry Croft, on an appeal of Mr. Croft's the district court's denial of Mr. Croft's motion to suppress by Douglas County District Court Judge Schatz. And I think two main issues here are mischaracterized in Judge Schatz's order denying the motion to suppress. Whether the court looks at this as a search incident to arrest or a probable cause search of a vehicle, I think two findings that Judge Schatz made mischaracterize the facts and are relevant to a determination of probable cause of a vehicle search or probable cause for arrest in the subsequent search incident to that arrest. And those two things are Judge Schatz's finding that the Ralston Police Department responded to a, quote, armed disturbance at a school in the Ralston area, and the second being that there were, quote, stolen guns involved. And I think both of those conclusions mischaracterize what the actual facts and testimony were of the motion to suppress. My initial analysis in my brief was analyzing this as a search incident to arrest, and the failure of there to be probable cause for any kind of lawful arrest. And if the court finds that there was in fact probable cause for an arrest, that the search incident to arrest exceeded the scope of what would be permissible under Arizona v. Gant regarding the scope of the arrest of the car. The testimony of the Ralston police officers, both Sergeant Bishop and Deputy Chief Leonardo, regarding the initial detention of the defendant, Mr. Croft, state that he was essentially immediately ordered to the ground at gunpoint.
Don't you have to go back before that, though, as to why this was happening?
Yes, I will. Regarding the initial 911 call, the source of that call is unclear regarding who made that call or how they had that knowledge. The initial call was that there was a party that was armed at Ralston Junior High, and officers responded to Ralston Middle School, thinking that was the likely site of the call. Weren't able to find anyone matching any sort of description the caller had given, anyone that had any guns. Spoke with the principal of Ralston Middle School, said no one had been up there. There were actually people at the school, even though it was prior to the school year starting, due to the fact that it was registration day at Ralston Middle School, and there was no indication of any kind of armed party. Officers checked all the other schools in the Ralston area, the high school, the elementary school, and found no evidence that anyone was armed with a gun or committed any sort of crime.
Does the evidence indicate whether the caller was identified or was anonymous, or do we know?
Testimony, I don't think, indicates either way. There was no testimony from the officers regarding the identity of the party, nor did either officer specifically state that the party wished to remain anonymous. But in any case, there was a rather quick and thorough investigation of Ralston High School, Middle School, and Elementary School, with no parties being found anywhere in sight at the elementary school or the high school, and no indication of any suspicious activity at the middle school. Subsequent to that initial 911 call, there was a call from Art Croft, who's the defendant's father, stating that his son, excuse me, was at his home, meaning Art Croft's home, in the driveway armed with a shotgun. At that point, I think there's, it's appropriate for the officers to investigate, but I don't think there's any evidence of either a misdemeanor being committed in the officer's presence or any probable cause to believe a felony was committed that would justify placing Mr. Croft under what I argue is essentially immediate arrest. He was placed in the back of a cruiser. He wasn't free to leave. He was detained, was the testimony of the actual officers involved. But certainly they were under the impression that he was in custody and not free to leave at that point, with no additional any indication that an actual crime had been committed. The caller didn't state that the gun...
But let's back up a little bit. When they came to the Croft residence and saw the vehicle and they asked the defendant to get out of the vehicle, he got out, or he was out, but then he started to reach back into the vehicle, didn't he?
I think the testimony that he started to reach back was prior to him exiting the car. An additional command was given by, I think it was Sergeant Bishop at that point, and the defendant got out of the car.
So the fact that he makes a movement towards the back seat of the car, when the officers know that there is at least somebody's indicating that he's armed, should not be a concern?
I think there's an officer safety concern, but I think that that doesn't get the officers to the point where they're opening a backpack in the car and then another container within that backpack to locate the contraband they eventually found. I think officer safety would allow a visual sweep of the vehicle for anything that may have been in Mr. Croft's reach at the time he's still in the car, but that justification is gone once he's removed from the vehicle and safely secured. There's no longer an officer safety concern once the defendant is removed from the vehicle and no longer has access to its contents. I think that's part of my argument regarding the Gantt justification for a search incident to arrest. Is an officer's safety reason for checking for weapons that would have been within the defendant's or suspect's immediate control. That justification is gone once the party is secure and no longer has access to the vehicle. Additionally, as far as any evidence of the crime that was being committed, which at that point I'm not quite sure, as I stated before, what is, there was no indication that, as I said, that Mr. Croft had made threat that would have amounted to a terroristic threat, discharged the firearm, unlawfully.
Well, hadn't his father said that this was that he had a stolen weapon?
That is the conclusion of Judge Schatz, but the first person to ever characterize these guns as stolen was Judge Schatz in that order. I believe the language Art Croft used when talking to the Ralston officers was that his son Barry had taken two shotguns from the home, and I think that's an important distinction to make between taken and stolen. As any teenager who's borrowed their parents' car, I think, can say there's a difference between taking something that you normally would have permission to take and stealing it. And none of the officers characterized those as stolen firearms. They didn't book him for possession of a stolen firearm or a theft by unlawful taking. And he wasn't charged with it.
But there's a difference between probable cause and in proof beyond a reasonable doubt or going forward with the charge, isn't there?
There is. But I don't think at that point the officers had probable cause to actually believe that the guns were stolen. And for the sake of argument, if they did, their search still exceeded the scope of what would have been allowed by probable cause. If you're looking at it from a search incident to arrest perspective, Art Croft clearly told the officers that there were two shotguns, which the officers categorized as long guns, and the container in which the contraband was found could not have held a long gun. And Sergeant Bishop also testified that at the motion to suppress that at some point prior to or during the search, he was notified that the second shotgun had been recovered at the defendant's mother's house and somewhere in Sarpy County, and the first was found in the car. So there's no more evidence to look for. And if it's categorized as a probable cause search based on the fact that we're looking for two long guns, probable cause doesn't get the officers into that backpack. If a warrant had been issued, it would have been for places capable of concealing a long gun. And ammunition or gun parts, as the state argues, are not evidence of that offense.
As I understood the testimony at the suppression hearing, the Ralston Police Department was originally contacted indicating that this particular defendant, Mr. Croft, was armed with the gun at the school. Is that wrong?
No, that's correct.
If that's the case, if he has a gun at the school, that would be a felony, would it not?
Well, 1204.04, which is the statute governing firearms on school property, has 8 exceptions regarding when it's permissible to have a firearm on school grounds, which include a non-student adult in a private vehicle encased, which this weapon was.
But would the police know that until they looked?
They wouldn't necessarily know, but there are many exceptions, well, at least 2 or 3 regarding adults on school grounds possessing a firearm. Without any indication that it was out or displayed, or the party didn't have a concealed carry permit.
Well, the evidence was he was armed with a gun, so
I understand.
What that means, whether it's in a case or not, I'm not sure you can come to that conclusion.
If that's the purpose of the investigation, which I don't think it was from the testimony of the officers, but at the point where the search is conducted, the clarification has been made by the senior Mr. Croft that they were long guns that they were looking for, which doesn't get the officers into the backpack, and even if it would, it wouldn't get them into the small plastic container in which the contraband was found. I think if the initial probable cause was a gun of unknown type, at the point the search was conducted, though, they knew they were looking for long guns, and that was the testimony of the officers. So they said at the hearing they were looking for were long guns. And basically, Sergeant Bishop's testimony, it sounds like they were on a fishing expedition. He said that it's his experience, when you find a gun, you usually find another one, but they had no independent probable cause to believe there was another firearm. They accounted for both of them that Art Croft said were missing, one in the car, one at the defendant's mother's house. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Sarah Marfisi, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska in this case. I'd like to focus my time on 2 issues. First, the search of Croft's vehicle was valid under the automobile exception as a probable cause search. Second, that the backpack and plastic container were within the permissible scope of that search. Although the district court analyzed this as a search incident to arrest rather than a probable cause vehicle search, this court is not confined to the reasoning of the lower court. An appellate court may affirm the denial of a motion to suppress on any ground supported by the record. For example, the Nebraska Supreme Court in State v. Dowland in 2014 upheld the warrantless search of a vehicle on different grounds than those relied upon by the district court. In applying its own reasoning to the search and seizure issue, the Supreme Court relied on the proposition that a correct result will not be set aside merely because the lower court applied the wrong reasoning in reaching that result. The Eighth Circuit in U.S. versus Gaffney, that's 789 F3rd 866, a 2015 case, also demonstrated that federal courts apply that same standard. And that's consistent with the standard of review, which is that the question of whether the facts demonstrate a violation of the Fourth Amendment is a question of law reviewed de novo. Given that it's proper to uphold the district court's order on any ground supported by the record, the state suggests that the cleanest way to analyze this search is under the automobile exception as a probable cause search. As argued in our brief, and contrary to Croft's briefed argument, the automobile exception is still a valid doctrine in Nebraska. This exception allows a warrantless search of a readily mobile vehicle if officers have probable cause to believe it contains contraband or evidence of a crime. A good case discussing the automobile exception, which I did not cite in my brief, is State versus Alarcon Chavez. That's 284 Nebraska 284 Nebraska 322.
Thank you.
Now, there are 2 advantages to using the probable cause search framework for this case. First, it's a simpler analysis. For instance, we don't have to reach the issue of when the investigatory detention became an arrest. That's in my brief. And second, and more importantly, and I don't reach this connection in my brief, but there's a slight difference between the probable cause to arrest standard in Nebraska and probable cause for a vehicle search. Statutorily in Nebraska, probable cause for arrest has to be based on commission of a felony or a misdemeanor in the presence of an officer, while probable cause to search a vehicle erases that distinction, just looks for evidence of a crime in the vehicle.
What reason would they have to be looking for evidence of a crime if it was not for having the gun on school property?
Well, there are several potentially. One misdemeanor would be disturbance of the peace. That his father called 911 saying that his son was in his driveway armed with a shotgun. On page 22, the officers characterized that as an armed disturbance. So that would be one misdemeanor justification. Additionally, they could be searching for evidence that he possessed stolen firearms or had stolen firearms from his father.
But how does that get you into the bag?
Yes, Your Honor, that brings me to the second point. And that is that the object of the search is evidence relating to any of these crimes. And under the circumstances here, ammunition would be evidence of these crimes. In the most technical sense, if officers found shotgun shells that could be used in the stolen weapons, that would be evidence that he stole or possessed those weapons. For instance, one of the allegedly stolen firearms was not on the scene, but it could, if it had a different gauge of shell, he had shells for that weapon, that could be evidence that he possessed it. Similarly, there was evidence here that he was mentally unstable, believed he was using these weapons perhaps as part of an FBI plot, perhaps was using them as part of disturbance of the peace. In that case, whether he had additional ammunition would be relevant to those crimes.
But do we have any evidence that he was allegedly mentally unstable prior to the search itself?
Yes, Your Honor, there's evidence of it. The initial 911 caller said that he was rambling about working for law enforcement. I believe the officers who detained him also heard him stating that he was working for the FBI. One of the officers said that he continued to ramble incoherently during the detention. So that would be at least evidence that he was mentally unstable. And similarly, evidence such as the ammunition could have been found within the plastic container in the backpack. The record shows that the container here held three prescription pill bottles. That's contained in Exhibit 1 of the Bill of Exceptions. The crime lab report shows that there were three different pill bottles, as well as there was drug paraphernalia, four types of pills, and Croft's license. So although we don't know the exact dimensions of the plastic container, a container that contained that many pill bottles and other objects could have contained, at the very least, ammunition for the weapons, and that would have been evidence of the crimes at issue here. Just to return to the probable cause that supported the vehicle search in this case, the search was supported by probable cause. Before Deputy Chief Leonardo began searching, the totality of known facts or circumstances supported a belief that evidence of the crime would be found in his vehicle. On the morning of August 4th...
The evidence of what crime?
Well, of any of the crimes, Your Honor, that I was discussing in answer to your earlier question, including disturbance of the peace, the stolen firearms, or actually stealing the firearms or possession of stolen firearms.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And the circumstances supporting that probable cause are further outlined in my brief. But for these reasons, the warrantless search of Croft's vehicle and the containers therein were supported by probable cause. And the state asks this court to affirm the judgment and sentence of the district court.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. You're excused.